sorry, what, the movies down there, or?
But you didn't have to be in order with it.
Well, I thought that's why we stopped doing it.
Hi, Royce.
Got a quorum, we'll call the meeting to order, and the first bill we're gonna take up is, House Bill 878, we're not gonna take any testimony on it, somebody wanna make a motion? Representative Snyder?
Mr. Chairman, I'm glad we had the one night to think about this. I would like to move at this time that we delete Section 2 of the bill and pass out a committee substitute with individual recommendations.
Is there an objection?
To what? Motion.
To the motion.
The first motion, the motion is to delete Section 2?
Delete Section 2 and send out a committee substitute on House Bill 878.
I will work on the first motion first to delete Section 2. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
I'll move with delete Section 1.
I move with delete the Representative Gary.
Get the vote. Is there a motion to move?
Object.
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 878. You made a motion? Is there an objection?
What, Mr. Chairman, what is the motion upon which we're voting? Is Representative Gary's motion?
No, I thought Miller deleted it.
Oh. No, if we're gonna dispose the motion, I have purposes of disposing an all objective motion.
I think it was ruled out of order.
It's an order, Mr. Chairman, but.
All in favor of deleting Section Number 1, signify by raising your right hand. Opposed? Motion fails. No, still another motion. Merle?
The second part of my motion was to move out a committee substitute for House Bill 878 with the deletion of Section 2.
Is there an objection?
I object.
All in favor of moving the bill out, signify by raising your right hand. Opposed? Motion carries. Our next bill is, House Bill Number 712. In the park.
Every day the house.
Improvement bond. Would anybody take a speak on that? Do we have anybody to testify on?
Yes, you gotta get us to answer all kinds of questions.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Paul Wall, I'm the Southeastern District Superintendent. At the meeting on Friday, I was asked to, I couldn't do it myself, asked to prepare a legal wish list. And to comment a little on the process by which the priorities are established from that legal wish list, if we end up with something official. The priorities essentially are several things that enter into it. One is just natural action. In several cases, there are three cases. We have erosion, which need to be addressed, so we're going to leave more of the park facility than we already have. So that becomes a natural constraint. Another item on there is the park restroom alteration, simply a matter of bringing park facilities into compliance with existing law. A third consideration is the existing of other funding that can be used to match the general fund money. And in most cases, then we've included an historic project, because there is historic preservation money available. And Reef's Landing is the particular project on this list that represents the pension and historic property. I might also mention there that fund matching is a matching, to get into the first preservation fund matching. And under the new project, and there's only three or four on this list, it's a question of where the need is perceived to be the greatest. And additional factor there is where money has been spent in the past. And that's why Cedar River got on the top of the priority list in the basis of a new project. There hasn't been a CIP project approved in Interior District in 10 years. The park was established up there and then expanded, but there hasn't been any money available. All the site is getting into the use. It's almost the point of rehabilitating the park rather than a new development. In terms of the rehabilitation project, that's again a matter of levels of need, the use, the state of disrepair and so on, all enter into it. In some part, we inherited problems. A number of the waysides were transferred to the state from BLM as the that, and they were, as you might well expect, not well maintained since they knew they were going to be transferred to the state. So we picked up sites in a bad state of repair. And then with maintenance level funding, which is kind of 70% or 60% of what's considered necessary, 10 years of a cumulative effect there at 70% times 70% and so on, it finally brought us to the point where these sites are really in bad shape. And it's just, there's nothing we can do with it. There's nothing we can offer in budget. So the approach here is simply to try to use a different route to get money in to take care of existing facilities. All of those additional items on the bottom of the printout, there are six of them, Anchor River, Moose River, Manatee, and so on. Those are all existing facilities that need to have attention to. In two cases, there's erosion problems. In the other case, it's just disrepair from lack of proper maintenance. In terms of particular concerns, we note that Fort Lake was on our list. Fort Abercrombie, and I might just mention briefly, I can speak that again in the credit title, is that there is money from the 1976 bond issue which can be matched to the Historic Preservation Fund in the amount of about $500,000. And that money will be spent for Abercrombie. And then addressing the question of more facilities north of Anchorage, the evidence that we have is that our best way of getting more visitation north of Anchorage in the summertime would be moving saltwater up there. Another possibility is that perhaps we can divert some of that use for that desire to use saltwater.
Speaker Malone, you got a question?
Yeah. What's the time again on this $500,000 that will be spent at Fort Abercrombie?
If not in the next fiscal year instruction, I might, if you're going to elaborate a little on the situation there, but in 1976, all of our engineering and planning developments, with one recent exception, have been capital improvement funded. And since that 1970 bond issue has gone down, we haven't CIP positions anymore. So when the new money came, we just said we weren't geared up with staff to handle that money. Plus then the VOR matching money is only available in about $1.5 million for $2 million a year increment. So there's a limit on how quickly we can spend the money. Not exactly why Abercrombie was probably one of those, I'm not sure.
Speaker Moore.
Mr. Chairman, it's not in the next year construction schedule. What year construction schedule is it? In which year? The one after that?
Tell the truth, I didn't see the rest of that information on the phone, and I didn't know.
Mr. Chairman?
Speaker Moore.
Then how do we know that there's any plans to spend any money there?
Request, we went on before that project, the identified as a place where money didn't spend. And, I think there's limits on how much, how well we can spend it, not spend it without coming back to some kind of tool. I know they could.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I agree with that, there's limits. I was just trying to pin the thing down because it was an interest to Mr. Snyder, and, I think that you did say in a statement a few moments ago that there was a half a million that could be spent at Fort Abercrombie, and I just wanted to know what the program was for that particular time, so I could tell Mr. Snyder.
That's contingent upon the availability of the historic preservation funding, rather than the DOR. And I'm not certain what amount they're projecting at, what level time of it.
Speak them all.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, one other question. Does the Division of Parks have any plans at present to move salt water to the north of Anchorage? Mr. Chairman?
Speak them all.
Then I suggest that's probably not an alternative that we could pursue in developing recreational facilities for the Anchorage area. And I'd like to hear what some realistic ones are.
Our best opinion is that the most suitable development to accommodate Anchorage-based recreational is Hampshire Pass. It has the most potential for a variety of winter and summer activities. It's located in the most suitable piece of property within the average visiting or viewing time to the recreational activities. It just narrows down to being the best piece of property.
Chairman, Adams, that I concur with that, but what about the other alternatives that suggested in the committee yesterday by, I think, Mr. Urien, instead of development of large areas, that smaller areas along the highway system could be developed?
That, of course, is a possibility, but we don't currently have property, in the state park system that money could be spent. If this were a direction that was given, plan for such a series of roadside activities. But in terms of the recreational demand, as you can see, that we would build those facilities, they wouldn't be utilized to the extent that the same if a facility built for the same amount of money somewhere else.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Bennett?
Thank you, sir. You mentioned earlier that parts of these funds are going to be used to improve restrooms and facilities. What about water supplies that are going to be roadside supplies? Is this part of this restroom?
This is strictly making our existing latrines usable by the handicapped. Each of the other items identified by me are many cases there is a well or two wells. In Fort Wayne, for example, two wells and 40-minute campground. We are trying with the rehabilitation project to bring in water to the site that has water now.
One of the things some of the test committee brought up by the environmental environmental conservation in reference to water. Any water that's taken from less than 30 feet is considered to be surface water and must be chlorinated. And I know for the fact that most of our roadsides and parks in fact have water and have sufficient water. It will only drop from the winter. So it appears as if there's some violations between our roadside parks and recreation areas of water. Conservation of desire. very trying to have had to do with other communities, they wanted to change the source less than 30 feet, because surface water is affected, they're obviously planning to very strange. They're a little bit concerned because of the, this precludes all future funds, state parks, state regulation. As most people know, picture pump and purpose of state method provides a fully smell of the state. Draw water from the state from coming to the school pump. You might look into that, because the first thing they do is bust, anywhere in this area, they fill out a compliance for their own state code.
Representative Miller?
Yeah, well, I'm, this is wishes, good, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, I was kind of curious, the way I would have read this, I was just reading this, it looks like at some place along the game, the governor's office has approved some dollars, and then somebody changed their mind, is that right? Because, for instance, on Chino River Recreation Area, you know, the maintenance request was $550,000. The governor's, I guess, amount was $550,000, and yet the amount requested was only $275,000. Unless maybe I'm missing some BOR monies or something like that.
Yeah.
This is the total amount and the split is for BOR.
Okay, so that regardless of what's in here, the amount of dollars that will actually be available is here.
Right.
Okay, I was reading that wrong.
And every case except maybe one, the highway roadside, that six waysides along the copper Richardson Highway, there the match isn't exactly 50-50 because there's certain portions of the road that need to be done, it's not done the other way.
I see, yeah. Okay, I thought maybe that might be the case, but I wasn't all that sure.
Representative Gary?
The ones that aren't listed on here yet show on this that as being approved by the governor. Where are those from, for instance? For instance, I see near Lake Wayside there for $145,000.
Yeah, that one is being requested in the general fund. I mean, from the, right.
Direct appropriation.
So the ones that are on here that don't show up are direct appropriations, King Mountain Wayside, restroom alteration.
Choquette Park.
Choquette Park. No, Choquette Park didn't make it.
Right. Oh, that's right, yeah.
I thought we just did something.
Well, we created the park 2 years ago, and then the development stage, maybe you'd comment on the stage of development that we're at on.
They just moved in the bird construction, just moved in their equipment last week, and they're starting the road construction there. They're anticipating getting that probably finished this summer, and then campground construction next summer. So it should be in operation then, either late next summer or fall in the spring.
Even in the absence of this money that
we
requested here?
What happened is we lost our land match on that northern parcel, and so we were wanting to keep the same level of development, but we're just going to reduce it, we're going to develop less. But we're really kind of in a binder for now in terms of cash, these documents, those full line docs.
Representative Gary?
Will you explain these the positions on the bottom of the deep forest, the river wayside, the Blue Creek wayside, and that Blue Creek wayside. What are these?
Those are, I guess, why I'm on my earlier wish list.
These are ones that went bye-bye?
That's right.
Oh, there we go.
Speak them all.
Yeah, well, following up on that, now, you had a comment, maybe I misinterpreted, because no, I'm not hearing too well today, but that there wasn't plans for development of waysides on the highway system north of Anchorage. What about these two that are listed here that seem to be falling into that, well, maybe three to fall into that category? Blue Creek, Manusu Glacier and Deadman Lake.
Those are all rehabilitation of existing lake sites.
Mr. Chairman, what's involved in that planned rehabilitation?
In some cases, it's, well, there are a fair bit of it is road improvement. And then the installation of all of the trains, whether it's several trains, new picnic tables, additional camping or campsites, wells, the boat launch facility, I believe, at Deadman Lake.
Take them all?
Well, those, generally speaking, without seeing the detail on it, but generally speaking, that some of those improvements you're describing would make the facilities usable by more people, like extra campsites would, a boat launch area would, so forth, right?
That's right.
Any other questions? Hearing none. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm, I apologize for wanting to dash away.
Mr. Johnson Lake, wayside, what was the plan for that? Is that additional camping?
That includes additional camping sites.
There's quite the true reason.
Bennett?
What was the,
Forty different, campground. There's two pumps, I believe, of, boat launch facility and parking lot there, but something quite similar to, similar development at Deadman Lake.
Chair, let's take them all.
Where is the Quartz Lake area?
Delta Junction. Red Swanson's entry. Kevin and Hughes from Stoke.
Well, we're named Swanson. You can't be on it, it'll sail right through.
Is there any other questions?
Thank you.
Just a comment on the, well,
Bennett?
Just to follow up. The ticket comes tonight, it's going to be 21 feet.
All right, thank you. What's the wishes of the committee? Is anybody else to testify? Speak them all.
Well, I don't want to cut off testimony.
Anybody else to testify? Susie, you want to testify? Oh, excuse me. Speak them all.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just expressing my opinion on this thing. There's a fairly small bond issue. It's $1.6 million. Admittedly, there's a good portion of the money, practically all of it, is going to be matched with federal funds, so that the total effort is about twice what's listed in the bond issue. But I think that the committee should give consideration to improvements or construction of additional facilities besides those listed in the bond issue at present. If it was a, if we were dealing with a $20 million bond issue and we're looking at $10 million worth of amendments, I think it'd be a different story. But due to the fact that you know, most of the project costs don't run into the $1 million range or in the $100,000 range. I think that, you know, $1 million more or less here, in terms of total state capital improvements program, may not be very much, but it might make a big difference in the ability of the system, a parks and wayside recreation area system, to meet the demands of being placed upon it. That's my own opinion for that.
Is there a motion to pass out House Bill number 712? Representative.
Well, I concur partly with what the speaker just said. I'd like to move that. Anyway, we're not talking about very much money. I'd like to move the addition of these wayside sites. You know, limited travels, every one of them to me seems to be very desirable. I'd like to move the addition of those to the bill before we, and then incorporate that as an exception.
That's one objection.
The six at the bottom. Six
Anchor River Wayside, Moose Creek Wayside, Mi'kmaq, Nuska, Deadman, Johnson, Caswell.
Casula.
I was going to make that motion that Mr. Miller was here, but it's 1,13,07 is where it will be 2,009.7.
Do you have a question?
No, I don't have a question on the motion. I agree with the motion. What I'd like to ask is, through the chair, I'd like to ask Mr. Miller to take that motion as a separate motion rather than to lock up the committee substitute at that point, because there might be another question that should be discussed.
Sure, okay, yeah. I'll just move the inclusion of these items.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Urien?
Because we're going to make a big park out of this place, I'd like to see that Willow Creek Wasteland at $504,000. That's $500 real estate development up there. That's the least we can give.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman,
it is a very heavily used facility between engines.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I happen to agree with that. I passed out a letter to the committee earlier pointing out the need for improvements on the Kenai Peninsula. I think that to the extent that the committee's incorporated the projects listed at the bottom of the page, that relieves some of the pressure there, but in my mind, the best way to do it would be to develop facilities someplace else. In particular, the highway system on the Kenai Peninsula just got a road that sometimes literally has bumper to bumper camper traffic on it for hours. Makes the use of the area very difficult for people, and I think that Mr. Urien's idea is a good one. I would move incorporation of that amount.
Is there an objection?
Yes. I'd just like to be recorded. No problem.
Okay. Would you read that one more time? Just to make sure.
Well, that's $504,900 for the Willow Creek Wayside, which shows on the bottom of the list up above there.
You want that included?
That's correct.
505, okay, down with the other waysides, okay.
Is there an objection?
Yes, sir.
Hearing none, sir.
Or Representative Miller's objection.
If you made that in lieu of capital, that would be a different matter.
And to build sidewalks.
I would like to move that we also include Quartz Lake Development and Mrs. Parsons area in Delta Junction for $411,000.
Quartz Lake, where is that?
That's not too far from where the junction of the Delta Highway and the Alpine Highway Week. That might give incentive, there are some people come up and visit the interior instead of going down in the field.
Is there an objection?
Right, might give incentive to the finance committee though.
No, I'm not. Moving on.
Of course, please.
If we're going to turn this into Christmas Street, I would certainly like to add the Chino Recreation Area that has been worked on. We did then, ah. Is it enough?
Speak along.
Mr. Chairman. A couple of points here. Mr. Chairman, I don't think that the motions adopted by the committee turned the bill into a Christmas tree. I think the bill in its original form is not enough money to meet the needs that people on the committee are very familiar with for recreational areas accessible to the public in the state. And approximately, admittedly, something more than double than perhaps the amount of the bond issued by the recommendations if they're adopted by the legislature. But out of a total annual capital improvements program in the state that probably runs on the order of $300 or $400 million a year, I think that about 1% of that money for recreational facilities is warranted. Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt a committee substitute incorporating the amendments adopted by the committee and report the bill out with individual recommendations.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Total is now $342,017.
Next one is a committee substitute for Senate Bill 428 amended.
The amendments that passed the committee at the last meeting were on page 1, line 12, after the word death, insert required military or government service. On line 20, you deleted the word knowingly and inserted fraudulently. And on page 5, page 2, line 5, after the word action, you added these words, unless waived in writing, the hearing place shall be held, etc. And then on page 3, line 14, There was no action taken on section H of the bill, or line 26.
Representative Snyder.
Chairman, on line 14, page 3, section H, I would move for the deletion of all language right after the word court. Permit holder may appeal to the Superior Court and the deletion of the following, the rest of the language.
What page is that on?
Page 3, line 14. I believe it's our original intention.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I on the motion, we didn't get a chance to look through this stack of paper that we have here yet, but Was there not some language suggested by the people from the Limited Entry Commission on that section?
Now we have Mr. Gardner. Oh, would you state your name for the record, please?
John Gardner, with Entry Commission. Mr. Chairman, one of the desires of the committee, which has been considered last time, to have language drafted which would allow the court to order in its discretion the conduction of a jury trial in fact-finding purposes. And a letter dated March 9 to the chairman, we have included language that really believe accomplished that purpose. This language, if incorporated, would have a different effect than that suggested by Representative Snyder.
Take them on.
Yeah. I'm sorry that I didn't review the letter previous to me, but in the letter,
you copy that thing?
Yes,
sir.
Letter dated March 9th, the second, well, reads, judicial review of the commission determinations, et cetera, et cetera. Provided that a hearing de novo granted under 4462-570D may in the discretion of the court be had with a jury sitting if application therefore is filed with the court no later than 10 days after service of the notice of appeal. That language appears to limit the court's discretion as to whether they're going to have a hearing de novo or not. And one of the problems that at least the people have talked about, I have any personal experience, is that every time that you require a hearing de novo as some sort of a good deal for the person that's appealing the case, that what you do is run into a terrible burden because they go through all this gathering of new evidence and discovery and whatnot, and it would seem to me that that might complicate things. Why not leave that question up to the court as to whether or not the record is sufficient upon which existing record sufficient to make a judgment upon or not? What is the relationship there? Could you explain it?
Mr. Chairman, if I might restate I think the question was, whether it is the court that's going to determine whether or not there's going to be a hearing de novo, and if there is one, whether it will appoint a jury. Mm-hmm. Our intention was that this language would leave that discretion with the court on application by the party within 10 days of the notice of appeal, so that it would be up to the court.
Speak them all.
Yeah, I'd like to ask an opinion from counsel on that.
I think this language could be reworked, but under this language, what would happen? You've really got two questions. Under the Administrative Procedure Act section that's cited, the judge determines whether the hearing will be de novo or on the record. This adds a second discretion to the judge as to whether it'll be tried to the judge or tried to a judge at jury. So he would retain, the judge would have both discretions. Of course, the second could only be exercised if there was an application. And that's my understanding of the wording here. The effect.
Speaker Malone.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, maybe I could ask then Mr. Snyder if he'd consider amending his motion to incorporate the language, or let's say the intent of the language, in the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission letter March 9th.
There should be almost two separate motions.
Chairman? Mr. Mall? While Mr. Snyder's giving that as consideration, the reason for doing, in my mind, the reason for doing that is that, I personally think that the responsibility of the court system is to provide justice under the law, and that by prescribing the procedures for a particular case, what we may be doing is either unnecessarily making those unnecessarily cumbersome, or in cases where we streamline them, we may be preventing a proper hearing from taking place or proper consideration from taking place. And maybe it's not all that important in this bill, but that's the reasons for going into this detail.
Is there any other questions?
Chairman, I will withdraw my motion.
Mr. Chairman, the motion is withdrawn. I'd like to make a new motion to insert the language of the March 9th letter from Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission for the proposed amendment, incorporating the certain changes in that are recommended by counsel. I'd like to ask Mr. Berry to identify those changes he thinks would be useful.
Yes, and you might ask for comment to see if I'm just not making the point that we made extremely clear. Provided if a hearing de novo is granted under AS 4462-570, it may, etc., making it clear that there is not even an implication that you're attempting to change a judge's discretion on the noble one.
Mr. Chairman, that's consistent with the intention.
Speak them all.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on that basis, I would move to incorporate the language as spelled out by Mr. Barrier, substitute for Section H of the bill on page.
I think I agree with that too, but I just got a nagging question.
Excuse me. I apologize.
I can see why the judge would be the one to decide whether or not there was enough information already in the record. He could make that judgment on a professional basis. But on what basis would he decide whether or not a jury trial was called for?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can only presume, maybe the attorneys present could comment on further. I presume it'd be in those cases where the facts were in dispute.
Well, but I mean, why would he decide whether a jury trial should be? He would think to himself, well, I can decide what's in dispute.
Well, the person that was appealing would ask for that. But if the judge found there were facts that were in dispute. In some of those cases, you might decide the best way to settle it would be to call in, some people and have them make a determination on a jury, which is generally, as I understand our system, that's generally what the jury tries to figure out is where the facts add up in the case. The judge handles the law. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe the counsel's present comment.
Yeah, I just have a little trouble deciding whether the judge should decide whether there's going to be a jury trial or not. I kind of agree with what you're saying, yet there's some nagging doubt in the back of my mind. I don't know on what basis exactly. Maybe Bill was going to comment. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, as all of you know, trial law is not my specialty, but I could not imagine granting a trial de novo unless there was a factual dispute and unless there was evidence that had not been either considered or fully considered in the judge's opinion at the administrative level. I would think the only reason for discretion as to whether you should have a jury trial or not would be, in essence, you could have a trial de novo because there is additional factual material that needs to come in. I would think a jury trial would be called for example, if you had a question of credibility. Whom do you believe in, where you have real fact disputes? And I would think that this would give, in essence, the court the right to determine whether there exist real factual disputes that need to be decided by the jury. It could decide that the facts are essentially undisputed, or there are no credibility arguments, and therefore a jury wouldn't serve a purpose. Or he could decide that there are factual issues and credibility questions, so we should use a jury. Actually, this would leave it to the total discretion of the judge, of course.
Okay. Any other questions? We've got a motion. Did you make that a motion? Is there any objection to adopting in the new language and the committee substitute? Hearing none, so ordered. You got the language.
If I might, I don't know whether I'm opening old ground or not that's been plowed, but the changing of knowingly to fraudulently when you're creating a kind of antiquated thing that goes back a good way. Knowingly is recognized as a state of mind sort of thing, and knowing misstatement of a material fact is normally what you mean by fraudulent. I think you might be creating some interpretation problems substituting fraudulently for knowingly here.
Mr. Chairman, the reason Mr. Berry replaced that word in there, particularly for material, and it may mean the same thing, but we didn't want anybody to just to say a proof that they didn't supply birth date or something, or simply to they didn't supply certain information, and that it really wasn't all that important. However, if they did supply fraudulent, that's the area we wanted to go to. And we were just afraid that the word materially and knowingly did not completely cover those problems.
The knowingly is an element in fraudulently. Knowingly making a material misstatement in order to achieve some goal, in this case, some valuable goal, in this case, permit application or permit transfer. When you take the knowingly out, I think you might have created some confusion as to the state of mind that had to be necessary. In other words, he has to know that it's false.
If the word was fraudulent, that means that would also indicate knowingly. To tie it down. That was our intention, to tie it down as much as possible to the actual case of supplying. And I asked one of the lawyers in the district, and they suggested that word. I'm not with it.
I'm not that much of an expert on criminal prosecutions, as I say, but the language, as I saw it immediately, somewhat bothered me. Apparently, you have considered what it would do in prosecution.
Chairman, if I might, for the committee's benefit, we did, when this bill went into consideration by the Senate, provide a copy of it to the people who are involved in the revision of the criminal code. It was at their suggestion that the word knowingly was inserted in the particular
for Representative Snyder.
The lawyer I asked was for Representative Fred Brown, who was working on the criminal code at the same time, and he suggested the
Speak them along.
Yeah, I don't know which is the best word to use. Maybe what we might do on that issue is leave it the way the committee has it at present, and the Judiciary Committee is the next committee referral. Ask them to review the use of the language in the bill. There were, that's a suggestion, I don't know. So, there were questions on questions in Section 3 of the bill. Came up the last time as to whether the penalties were too stiff or whether they were going to work right or whether they were not severe enough. I don't know if there's more discussion on that.
Anybody else got any questions on it?
Chair,
speak along.
Still questions on that? Could we run through the amendments that we've made on the bill so far? Anybody knows who we are?
On line, page 1, line 12, after the word death, required military or government service. Page 2, line 5, add a new sentence saying, unless waived in writing, the hearing place shall be held.
And there was new language in that sentence. Unless waived in writing by the permit holder, is what I have.
Unless waived in writing?
By the permit holder. Yep.
Comma, the hearing place shall be held.
Permit holder. Comma, the hearing.
And then the amendment that was just adopted deleted the present language in H, lines 14 through 16, page 3, and substituted judicial review of Commission determinations under this section shall be in accordance with AS 4462-560-4462-570, provided if a hearing de novo is granted under AS 4462-570A, it may, in the discretion of the court, be had with a jury sitting if application, therefore, is filed with the court no later than 10 days after service of the notice of appeal.
Any questions? Representative Urien?
Yeah, I have a question. Can you tell me if the jury provision law where an entry permit can be lost to a violation of the fishing law?
Mr. Chairman, there's no provision at present. If by fishing law you mean fishing laws relating to where you can fish, at what time of year you can fish. The only provision for loss of an entry permit are those contained within 1643. 1643 addresses only violations of 1643. If I may ask a question of the committee in relation to the amendment to section 1, on line 12, page 1. There was some discussion in the first committee meeting about what would constitute required government service. And pardon me for my lack of familiarity with how the committee expresses its intent. But I wonder if the committee will resolve to its satisfaction whether or not, for instance, governmental service of a moral nature does not necessarily require to come within that language.
Yes.
Hi. Only if I ask that question. Mr. Gardner, I believe I asked that question like we're down here and the season is going on it that way. We need permits. we can't leave here. I think I'm the one brought that one up. If we could get our permit transferred, you know, while we're in session until we get out again. Speaker Malone, you had something on that? We got that language in there now, don't we?
Mr. Chairman?
After death, Speaker Malone?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I agree with Representative Urien and yourself on the subject. Or the tent guard.
Mr. Chairman, that's fine. I just want to make sure that we understand what the last paper.
Well, that's stated in there clear enough not to understand that. Any other questions? Representative Snyder?
We did have a question, particularly Representative Elias, on page three, the new language there for the third conviction.
The blame was that
on 25, 26. And I believe his point was that the person on a third conviction, the person shall forfeit all internal use of entry permit held by him. But then the person who assisted in that, knowingly or giving false information, whatever, didn't suffer the same consequences.
Speaker Malone?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that was a point that was raised by Mr. Elias, and I don't know if there's comments on it, but as near as we could tell, it could extend to people that maybe weren't intended to be covered under the law.
May I say something on that? We should do something with that for the simple reason. If it happened a lot of times, somebody didn't put the right number on their buoy under SetNet, you know, which isn't really, you didn't create a crime, and you get your first offense for that, $25.
Not under this chapter.
Whatever. I know, I just want to make clear that if you had we're setting out 2 minutes before 6, if your clock was on.
Well, that was the result of my previous question. There is no provision in here if a person violates the fishing law. If it's permitted, there's no way to jeopardy.
This is just, as I understand the answer to your question, this penalty section applies only to the limited entry law, but not to the fishing law violations of the fishing regulations.
Mr. Chair, Speaker Malone.
I got one question on this, though. When we get down to this third-time loser here, it says they shall forfeit all interim use and entry permits held by him. I don't have any quarrel with that part. Then it goes on to say, and loses eligibility for future issuance or transfer of interim use entry permits. Well, isn't that pretty much saying that the person's shut out of the fishery, period? That's what it says. And what that says then assumes is that there's no possibility of rehabilitation of these individuals.
Right.
And, you know, even a person that's convicted of a serious crime, murder, for instance, if they serve their sentence and learn how to behave in a manner acceptable society, they can come back, out of the system and become a citizen and have all the rights of a citizen. And this seems to me to be going a little far here in this case. And I'd like to comment on that section.
Mr. Gardner?
Mr. Chairman, the language that is being substituted for is set out on 22 through 25, graphic portion of section 3A. And the commission was merely restating that language in its suggested amendment. The statute that's presently drawn provides for criminal loss of eligibility. And the commission was, through section 3A, merely attempting to provide for those who assist in the violation under the section. As far as the commission is concerned, the legislative judgment is to what kinds of penalties we're trying to account rationale for vegetation coverage, the legislature wishes to provide for smaller or no period of reissuance of the fishing game forest.
Representative Urie?
I would suggest that for the most part, the probably the original intention was the language no longer necessary. That was for the initial permit application. There was a time when no one had permits, and then they get the first, now all the permits are out. For those parts. So we made sure that nobody lied and cheated to see if they could use the system. Now they've already, they're in the system, really, so maybe it's not necessary.
Speak them all.
Yeah, at a minimum, Mr. Chairman, I think that the period of time ought to be shortened from forever down to something else, like maybe 3 years, maybe 5 years. But I think at a minimum we ought to do that in the law. I don't know how the other members of the committee feel about it, though. And, I don't want to push it, so the opposition. I'm not in this fishing business myself.
How about Lake Gunk Drive in 3 years?
I'll go for making this 3 years and making drug driving forever.
Well, worse. Gardner?
Mr. Chairman, if I might suggest that if you're so inclined, page 4 of the bill, parallel section of the law restricts loss of eligibility for providing a period.
It's a long time when you've got to pay $100,000.
My suggestion, Mr. Chairman, is that if you change the three, you may want to change both to three.
Speak them all.
No, the other suggestion here we've got is to add for a period determined by the court, which comes back to discretionary sentencing again. I guess we heard a speech the other day by the Chief Justice, and then one today by the Judiciary Chairman, pointing out the evils of discretionary sentencing.
I'd make a motion to adopt 3 years.
I'd object to I think 5 years really is. It's not an unusually harsh term for the amount of money and the effort you're talking about.
Speak them all.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I the second section of that loss of eligibility is for a period of not more than 3 years. So if on the third offense we make it a mandatory 3-year minimum, I think that's reasonable myself. I support the motion.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Will that motion now read on line 27, permits held by him and loses eligibility for not more than 5 years for future issuance?
Three. Future issuance or transfer of interim use or entry permits for a period of 3 years. Okay. Is that
3 years? Three. Still, we need a Representative Snyder.
Just it may be a section that the fisher would be better qualified to address. In section 4 now, by we have the words knowingly, and again on line 11 being added, if you get with change it in section 2 to fraudulent. Does that cause any confusion?
You change the word false to fraudulent. Isn't that correct?
There was a motion to adopt the fraudulent rule in place of knowingly in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, speak them all.
My notes may not be correct. They may not reflect the motions by the committee. Chairman, my notes reflect to replace the word false on line 21, page 1 of the bill, to the word fraudulent.
Materially false with the word.
Yeah, materially.
Both those words, and just adding the word fraudulent information. I failed to correct fraudulent information.
Correct fraudulent?
Knowingly, I guess.
It means materially false.
Is there an objection? There are none, so ordered.
What was to be done with knowingly online?
Did that delete materially on line 21 and substitute fraudulent?
Right.
Materially false.
False is deleted.
The word fraudulent is inserted there on line 21.
Fraudulent.
Knowingly on line 21.
Fraudulent. Delete false. Was there a motion on knowingly?
No, that's just left alone, though. It's consistent, line 20 on page 1 and section 4.
On line 21, is fails changed?
No, I'll fail to correct fraudulent information. Delete the word materially false and put fraudulent.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, I might take them along. I may have misled you a little bit. I'm probably afraid of everything to do on page 4 of the line 17.
Line what?
Line 17.
17. Take that 3.
Mm. Huh? That's to be made 3? What was your recommendation?
The amendment that was passed by the community adjusters on page 3, line.
Right. So on page 4, we changed that to 3 on line 17.
Mr. Chairman, speak them all. That would make, if we did change it to 3, it would make it consistent with the section 3 of the bill. And I would move that we make that change. Change page 4, line 17, change the word 5, word 3.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Speak them along.
Mr. Chairman, I would move we adopt the committee substitute incorporating the amendments adopted by the committee.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman,
speak my own.
No, no. Due to the changes, the committee may wish to review the clean draft before reporting the bill out. So I'll leave that question to somebody else, but I would recommend that we forward a letter to the Judiciary Committee asking them to specifically to review the new language in the legislation.
Just have a judicial referral?
Yeah.
On the House side of that.
Oh, yeah.
That's to be signed by the chairman, a letter of intent.
Yeah, just ask them to look at the language so they don't forget to do that.
Is there a motion to pass the bill out?
I can go through the chairman.
Snyder?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to look at a clean draft before we can pass it out. I have once I've able to look at the language, then I probably won't have any objection to passing it out, but I would like that chance forward it on the judiciary. So I would move that we have adopted a committee substitute, and then it be placed in our boxes for whatever. Take a look at it before we pass it out.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We'll bring it up on the first or our next listen. We get it back, and won't take no testimony.
No.
Well, we got another committee substitute for House Bill 525. Inspection of fish.
Mr. Chairman, the sponsor requested, he's out of town, he requested us to hold House Bill 669. Fifteen.
No, we won't. If, Mr. Hansinger's here, maybe I should hear him.
Pardon?
Is Dr. Hansinger here on this bill?
No.
Oh, I see.
Where, 525.
525, okay.
State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ted Thomas, Department of Natural Resources, with me is Dr. Fred Hansinger, who's the veterinarian in the department, and also has the inspection function for the address to the bill and the reason for it and the rationale.
As I'm sure most of you are aware, the fisheries inspection program was transferred from Health and Social Service to Natural Resources at the closing of last year's session. And in the interim, why we have found it necessary to come back and ask that to clarify some wording within our statutory responsibilities for fisheries programs to bring it into uniformity with our other programs. And this is what this actually does. We have met with industry on a couple of occasions on this. They had asked for one clarification. That's why there was a committee substitute made over the Senate to clarify the statute and be in agreement with the various industry people. And I think all this does is bring the fishery and fish products into conformity with our other inspections. Program and I'd be more than glad to answer any questions you might have on clarification.
Is there any questions?
Have we embargoed anything previously, or I guess we haven't had the authority to pass this act?
Well, you get into semantics because quarantines and embargoes, you know, by definition are the same, except that when I got onto the waterfront, I found out that they talk strictly embargoes, whereas in our animal health program, we talk quarantines, and when we talk in meat and meat products, we talk in detention procedures, so it's terminology. And they requested that we use the word embargo rather than on detention. I might say yes, we have handled the numbers since we got into it 8 months ago.
Big amount.
Sure. What's the word embargo mean?
It's actually the retention of a product for a period of time until a determination is made for either a rework and put it back onto the market or a complete destruction of the product. This can be either the raw product itself or it can be packaging materials or ingredients. Lots of the embargoes that we put on are for salt, is a real bad one out in the process. They handle very poorly.
page 9?
On page 2 of the bill, we've got, I just ask if any certain problem comes up. We're down the definition section at the bottom, item 2, Fisher Fisheries products, which is in quotes means any aquatic animal, etc. Then up in section 2 at the top of the page, it says require routine inspection of food, animals, fish, poultry, and derivative food products. How come that page 2, line 2 doesn't say fish or fisheries products? I mean,
well,
is that a conflict, or is it that's definite, intentional, or what?
No, really, you don't get down into the product section until you get down into 050, which is actually the fisheries product.
Line 4. Or 0402. On line 12.
Mm-hmm.
Up in the, in 020 that you refer to, actually they're talking more of either the animal, the whole fish, or the whole poultry before you get down into the product.
The raw material. Really.
Yeah.
May I ask what's the problem right now?
Well, when they transferred the program last year, we only had one reference, and that was on the first page down in 7. This was the total statutory responsibility that we presently had, or at that time had, for examination of fish. And it did not bring the fishery products into conformity with the other sections of the statutory responsibilities we have. All this does is clean it up and bring the fishery products into the same conformity as meats, poultry, and the other inspection programs.
Representative Snyder?
I remember last year's discussion on what they call the red meat certification, so this will bring that into conformity with red meat.
In fact, right at the present, one of the reasons they brought it over, we're now cross-training some of our meat inspectors into seafoods and vice versa, our seafood inspectors into meat, so that we get better coverage for the amount of money and the personnel we have on the field.
Representative Akers?
Yeah, you stated that they also get into the inspection of raw fish products. But why necessarily for raw fish when it's going to be, I'd say, repackaged again?
Well, some of our embargoes that we've had are the quality of salmon that are unloaded for on the docks for processing that are just either spoiled, deteriorated. We're fighting the shrimp problem all the time. If they're out more than 4 days, like, you stand about a 90% chance you're going to have a fast shipment of shrimp.
But the Kodiak boats don't fish up in the shrimp of the Nile, which wouldn't have that problem. Or vice versa.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I see in the Senate that the Senate Committee substitute deleted section 0305-030. Why did they do that?
This was the area that industry showed some problem with, and it was more in the grading and the classification of their product. This is mandatory for us in our agricultural inspection on produce and fruits and this type of thing. And we found really no reason to include fishery products in that section, so we deleted it. Because actually we feel we have all the coverage we're going to need actually in these other.
I got to ask another question now. I should know, but I don't. Who inspect the products up there now in the shrimp canneries? Somebody comes around, they say they're inspectors, but I really don't know who they're working for.
Well,
they made them put all stainless steel in, and all concrete. Any place where they had wooden floors, they had to put all concrete in or steel. Is that you people?
That's us, or it might be the Food and Drug Administration out of Seattle. They come up on occasion. And if you're moving product interstate, well, they may have jurisdiction also to move into a plant.
Well, the thing what I want to know is if you're with them or if it's going to be another layer on top with. Or,
no, this is this is kind of a unique one because this is the only food inspection program that we don't do for the federal people. In meat inspection, all the produce and fruit and grain inspection, everything, all of our inspectors are certified both federal and state, and we have been in contact with both the National Marine Fisheries, who also has some inspectional responsibilities, and Food and Drug, and I think we will be working out some cooperative efforts.
Representative Yuri.
In response to the chairman's question, we asked who was out there inspecting the fence, but maybe it was Country Forest and some of the steel, it could have been your people.
It could have been ours, or it might have been Food and Drug.
I was curious how it could have been yours, and you haven't had the power until it's built there.
8 months ago, it was transferred to.
But the only reference under the existing law, you pointed out, was Terrence Devon on page one, which has to do with
exam inspection.
You have awful broad powers.
That's right. We have two very broad powers.
Well, I got to ask another question. Do you inspect for the, like the Navy or the Air Force or anything that's put up in a cannery what they're going to buy?
Yes. In fact, we're in, this is one reason we're in contact with National Marine Fisheries. I don't know if you realize it or not, but within the last year, all of the military contract work as far as fishery products go, it's been transferred over to National Marine Fisheries and away from Food and Drug, and they're in contact with us now on the possibility of a cooperative effort where we could do the inspection.
Just brought to my attention, they had your inspectors in False Pass 1 year. That was Peter Pan. And somebody else came in there and they were going to close them down. They said they wouldn't let the Air Force buy their canned salmon or something. They just passed the inspection. So the guys wanted to come in and have dinner. They were in there in a small plane. They told them, no, you didn't approve our food, sir. Take a walk. So they left.
Yeah. We get far afield from inspection this morning. I think I spent all my time answering the phone from Kodiak. We're out of crab bait out there, so they're looking for anything. We're getting cold chickens out of the valley and slaughter off all. So we get far afield of inspection.
Representative Gary.
I'd like to ask sort of a related but unrelated question. You inspect canning outfits?
What canning
canneries?
Canneries,
fish
canneries. Canneries.
Yeah, any food processor can tell when you have something wrong.
I just I'll relate to you a complaint that I had. That you weren't feeding all people equally. I think there's a law that says everything inside the can has to be labeled on the label. And, there's a particular place in Mr. Malone's district that I understand doesn't put this on the labels, but other people would be made sure that it's new, rather new in the business.
Is it in dairy product?
Right. It is. You hit right on the notes.
Pick them all.
Never mind.
I didn't get that question. What was that? You have to have them labeled before you.
Well, a can has to say what's inside has to be on the label.
We have labels.
This particular place isn't required to do that. They've had labels for years.
Well, if you bring that to our enforcement
study. Well, what somebody that was new in the business that tried to get a little competition.
Right. And well,
I probably told how they had to do the things that somebody else didn't have.
I might give you an explanation. I don't know if it's the right one or not. But sometimes on approved labels, and there's either a transfer of ownership or something happens, we'll allow them to use up what supply of labels they have on hand before they have to go to their new label.
Even if that supply lasts
5 years? Well, not that long. We usually put it within a time frame, but that might be one exception where you'll see a label sometimes.
I suspect it's more to the story that's being laid on the table. I don't know what it is.
Could you go over that salt problem again?
Well, it says we have responsibilities not only for the raw product of fish or the shrimp or the crab, but also for the products that are used as an ingredient. One of the worst things we run into is the handling of salt. You'd be surprised the amount of salt that we have to either have them destroy or use it for some other purpose other than processing.
Knowing your party problem, knowing that your party problem, I know you'll be, maybe all I could do would be in that. Representative Gary Southland.
Mr. Chairman, I move we take up 2% of Bill 525 in bid recommendation.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
I'm going to migrate this bill upstream.
That's it.
Yeah, I haven't seen you.
There's nothing more to come before the committee will be adjourned and signed a report before you.
You always have a little bit of flexibility for appropriating that view.
Speak them along. I think that, Mr. Chairman, I think that Mike's got a point there, but of course, I think you also have to consider that in the case of some sort of national shortage that might occur, that more than likely those purchases would not be able to take place, that federal regulation would apply. So what we're really talking about is a situation where we're faced with, at least to some extent, free market conditions. And I don't think Section Y is intended to go beyond that. I don't know. It's hard for me to conceive that, believe that, if there was some sort of embargo, let's say, or crisis of some kind occur in gas, that we'd be able to exercise that option without the approval, at least, of the federal government. Maybe in those cases where it could be exercised with that approval, it would be applicable.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Snyder?
Jack, there's nothing particularly magic then on the 49%. I moved the figure the other night during the work session just to bring it down to generally the corporate joint venture level from 100%. Do you have any thoughts on whether we should have a percentage along with that, along with the sentence that we're probably going to adopt, whether that's 49 may again be too high? Do you have any thoughts on what?
Well, as between lowering the amount at this point or giving the commissioner the discretion to waive, I think my tendency is to want to give the commissioner the ability to waive. But I understand Mr. Miller and not wanting him to waive it down to zero maybe is the thought. And we hadn't intended that, and we could put a floor on it. He could waive it down to not below a 16 2/3%. I think that would be safe.
5 years from now, not even long, it's going to be sitting in years. It just might just become just the standard thing, just waive that whole thing every time. And then all of a sudden, whatever effect we've got, they come along.
Well, I don't think it's going to be that automatic, though, because the basis for it is the projections of in-state use. And so I think that question is going to have to be addressed each time then a lease sale comes up. But I don't think it happens automatically.
Would you like to read the amendment?
Including the floor of 16 2/3, Mr. Chairman?
Right.
Well, the amendment I read was the commissioner may waive all or any part of this right
at the time of the announcement of a sale if he believes it to be in the public interest.
Is there an objection?
Still bothers me. You know what? It's not quite the right.
Well, I'll remove the objection. I'll talk to finance if I get off the side of that.
Make that a motion.
Mr. I think I had a motion pending on it.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman?
Wait, you want to comment on that?
No, I had, I think you covered all the bases on it. Mr. Chairman, I had just one other point. With respect to the language in section P on page 8, which has to do with the reduction of royalty and other requirements in relation to unitization, we've looked at that in the agency as close as we can and talked with Mr. Roderick and also with Phil Holdsworth. And it's our opinion that the language you have on page 5, section I, which is essentially the BP language, is almost totally circumvented, or if not totally circumvented, by the language in section P. And we would suggest that if you want the effect of section I to be, if you want section I to have effect, you should probably put the same limitations on the reduction of royalty in section P. Mr. Holdsworth commented to me this afternoon that, and he may want to comment on this, or you may want to hear from him on this, but he indicated to me that that was originally in, language was originally included within the unitization part of Title 38 for the same purpose that the language in Section I is included, to wit, to prolong the economic life of the field. It seems fairly clear that Section I would cover it in any case, but if you want to leave it in Section P, and I understand your desire not to mess with that particular language because of its complexity and the fact that we really don't know what the thing does, is I think it would be appropriate and wouldn't cause any problem to put the same kind of qualification in his action exercise of that option. The I don't think Jack agrees with me on this, so I'm sure you'd want to hear from him on that point as well.
Yeah. Well, first, the two sections do really address two different things, and while if you're referring to the procedures for the reduction of royalty,
that's correct.
Okay.
The reason they'll both be operative or options available.
Why are they in conflict, I guess, is what I'm saying. I can understand.
They're not in conflict. It's just that I sets a much higher standard for the exercise of that option than does P. And they'll both be available to the commissioner in any case where a production is unitized, and as far as I know, all production in the state is covered by a unit of one sort or another, and or almost all. And therefore, whenever there's a unit, the commissioner will have the authority to reduce the royalty without respect to the limitations you included in Section I.
You're saying is the section on page 8 could turn out to be an escape hatch from that language?
Exactly.
I think it would be, from a drafting point of view, fairly simple to reference P to I and simply say that it can be, yes, to apply the same standards, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to comment to the administration.
Chairman, subsection I was drafted for a specific purpose, which was to prolong the economic life of the field at the declining stages. And it makes no reference to units. Whereas in section P, of course, that is language that applies to units. I really haven't had a great deal of time to think about this, but it seems to me that it isn't necessarily true that all production will come from units.
Would the units, the unitization would occur, I presume, in advance of this 2-year period, isn't that correct? So you couldn't just make the exact same as apply, or you couldn't even do it.
Mr. Chairman, I think that the authority in Section P is exercisable at any time the commissioner agrees with the parties to hold the leases within the unit.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. So if we made then all the standards of I applicable, standards within I are that at least 2 years has to have gone by.
It would limit the commissioner's authority to use.
So he couldn't allow a unitization plan.